Since iTunes only keeps the last 100 episodes of any show, some of our show topics that seem to help the most people are no longer available when people search on iTunes. So, in an effort to make that information available to more people, from time to time we're going to re-air some of our most popular show topics. You can also go to kickitnaturally.com and search for any topic in our search box. For now, enjoy this show that originally aired in 2014.
T.C. Hill is not a doctor and does not claim to be a doctor licensed in any type of medical field. Don't be an idiot and use anything heard on the show as medical advice. This information should be used for educational purposes only, and you should contact your doctor for any medical advice. Now get off me. Welcome to Kick It Naturally. I'm Kenna McEnroe, and I'm here with T.C. Hale, author, natural health expert, producer.
Radio shower. I know how to do this again.
Yeah, podcaster. Yeah, there we go. We also got Will Hottie Patati Schmidt coming from us live from the Bay Area again. What's
Hello.
Up, Will?
Hello.
Hello.
You know, Will, I'm looking at you in on this Skype video camera. Yeah. And then I ran out of here for a minute, and I came back, and I'm like, where's Will? You know, because the chair in front of me was empty. Oh, it's like, for some reason, I associated that he was sitting there. It's like it was real.
You know, you can move, you know, out of the way of the camera.
Oh, I didn't know about
that.
So there
you go.
Interesting.
That's funny. Oh, you thought I was in the room with you?
Yeah, there's a chair that's right behind where I'm looking at you in the screen. I came in, I was like, where's Will go?
That's a good review for Skype. It's like being there.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So this week we are doing round two of alcohol.
We're doing a second round of alcohol.
Yeah, a round for everybody, a shot. And if you haven't liked us on Facebook yet, go ahead to Kick It in the Nuts. That's where we post all of our show topics that we do on future shows. You guys can ask any questions or even actually suggest a show topic, and we will follow up on it.
That's what we'll do. We'll say things about it. We'll say words.
We'll say a bunch of words. And before we dig right in, for all of our Kick It Naturally listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial so you can check out their service. Just go to kickitinthenuts.com/audiobook to find the link.
That's where you'll find it. I'm good at confirming things.
Yeah. Should we just dive right in?
Yeah, let's pick up on Rick questions since he sponsored this show.
It's like Rick's here,
uh-huh.
You know?
I know.
So, what actually causes the hangover effects of drinking, such as bloodshot eyes, headache, nausea, overall queasiness, dry mouth, etc.? I've noticed that when I drink an excess amount, such as with friends or at a business function or alone in a hotel room, I'm kidding, I added that last part, even when drinking slowly over a long period of time, the next day I will have a rough voice and lips that are redder than normal and are both dry and cracked. The rough voice I could write off to talking for a long time, but why do I get the red dry lips? It doesn't seem to matter whether the event was outside in the sun or inside a building, so I can't blame sunburn or wind or dry conditions on it.
So one thing, like Will was just talking about at the end of the show last week, where alcohol has the ability to restrict oxygen to make it to the red blood cells, and what can happen is it can cause those blood vessels to kind of clump together. And that will result in like either red on the face or like bloodshot eyes.
Red on the head?
In like bank, me? It can cause.
Oh my gosh, red hair red on because the head. Of it.
Because you're drunk.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Will, do you have anything that you want to add to that as far as causing? Because it does seem to do that with a lot of people where their whole face will get red or just particular parts. And we also see the other aspect that Kenna was asking about the nose that you see with people who've been drinking a long time. How would you describe
it? You know, the big bulbous noses that get really big and then they have like the spider veins all over them, you know?
Those are all related. Like the redness in the cornea, it's called potato nose actually sometimes.
Right, wow. Yeah.
It's, you know, I don't think that's the actual technical.
I have a little russet nose.
But, and rosacea and spider veins, they're all connected to the same cellular energy production problem. Flushing, like niacin can like sometimes cause that, but flushing can be a little, it can be more immediate, but those other more fibrotic changes they're caused by sort of that same energy production problem occurring over a long span of time. So one thing is our body will flush and put a lot of blood towards our skin to let off excess heat. So sometimes you'll have flushing as part of that, because alcohol is one way that our body actually helps keep ourselves warm. Like, we actually create a molecule that's pretty much identical to gin that kind of drips into our bloodstream every few hours, or just kind of not like one drop per hour, but it's like over.
It's like the equivalent that the pancreas makes this. Yeah.
I just had a thought. We were talking about if there are any benefits, but if you were freezing cold outside, stuck somewhere, it would be good to drink alcohol.
It does help keep.
Yeah. This is something that Will and I teach people that, and I don't use this a lot, but what Will's talking about is there's a carb burner imbalance that we talk about in our books and classes. And if somebody's really operating off of, carbs most of the time, that their body seems to have a problem making this drop of quote unquote alcohol from the pancreas. And this drop that the body makes is used to regulate the body temperature, so to speak. So when they can't do that, a lot of times they'll get really cold all the time. And you can have a person take like a half a shot of gin, and just over the day, they just kind of sip on it. Like, it's just touching their lips. They're not really drinking like gin all day, but it's just kind of enough to introduce it to the body. And you're kind of replacing that drop that the person doesn't have the ability to make. And they fix the problem. They're not really cold all the time. So is that what you're saying, Will, is if someone's drinking a lot of alcohol, that it can have the ability to create heat?
Yeah, so that's part of like the flushing, like the blood going to the surface to let off excess heat, kind of like water boiling, like more water vapor will help heat to escape. But the fibrotic changes that you're talking about, Kenna, with the spider veins, the potato nose, the rosacea, as well as the red eyes and neovasculation, meaning the new growth of more blood vessels in the eyes, that occurs when there's stress to the cells, where there's an energy demand that exceeds the energy production capacity of the cells. So like, you're asking too much energy through stimulation to be produced, and you don't have enough resources to produce it. That will cause inflammation of the cells, and with that, you'll get those fibrotic changes.
Yeah, and now let's look at the rest of Rick's question, because he's also getting dry lips and all that kind of stuff. And you got to remember that alcohol is a diuretic and can basically cause dehydration. When you start to drink and you pee once, you're peeing all night. Mm-hmm. And you're peeing out all of that, not only the minerals like we talked about last week, but you're peeing out your fluids, which can create any problem that dehydration can create, which could be dry, chapped lips, but it could be a lot of other things too. You want to talk about any other things?
You're a good point. Like the dry lips, like it is from dehydration of your body, like peeing out that alcohol. So the chappedness is one thing, and the dry mouth is also directly related to that. But then the other, the more like longer term fibrotic change, like the growth of new skin cells in the nose and the blood vessels in the eyes, like that sort of accumulates as you, it's not just alcohol that'll cause it, but any sort of stress can cause that when the cells don't have enough energy to do what they need to do to function normally. And alcohol is a stress like that, and it's discoordinating the normal performance of your brain and all its secretion of neurotransmitters and the hormones that follow from that. The cells just aren't able to perform normally, just like you can't drive a car normally. There's all sorts of functions that are impaired when ethanol is getting in the way of that normal signal transduction pathways. So that's one thing contributing to energy production problems that trigger those fibrotic growths and changes.
And not only is that the alcoholic cell itself a stress to the body, but so is who did I wake up with and why is he wearing my pants? Yeah, that can be a whole other stress.
Where is my wallet and car, and why did I email everyone?
Right. And so that can be one issue. When you look at headaches, that can be a variety of things that are causing that, because we know that alcohol is going to create sugar spikes and crashes, and both spikes can create headaches, and so can crashes. Alcohol also appears to have a pro-catabolic effect, especially at the higher levels. And we talk a lot in our headaches episode about how a catabolic imbalance can create some major headaches, especially starting in the back of the head, just from the displacement of potassium and other minerals at the cellular level. Going to the wrong place can create that type of headache. So there's a variety of headaches you could get just from drinking. As far as the nausea and all that unwell kind of feeling, you have to remember that the load of what you put into your system was toxic to your body. We see people all the time that are nauseous 24/7 just because their body is in this toxic state. So for one person that has the ability to remove toxins very well, maybe their bile is flowing well, they can get rid of garbage, the liver is functioning effectively, they can drink and not feel so horrible the next day, as to where someone who maybe their body can't take out the trash quite as effectively, the next day they're pretty wrecked and hurling and praying to the porcelain god.
Yeah. And there's a good sort of parallel in...
I meant throwing up, Kenna.
Mm-hmm,
okay.
Some, you know, there's parallels in what can make someone more sensitive to a particular toxin than someone else. And we mentioned in the last episode how if you don't have polyunsaturated fats in your liver tissue, if you drink alcohol, you don't get cirrhosis. You only get it if there's unsaturated fats in there, and alcohol can then be a really damaging thing. And it's similar to... if the same toxins of polyunsaturated fats or melatonin, if they're in like your eye tissues, then your eyes are way more sensitive to light and they're way more subject to like the UV damage that can be caused by certain light waves. But if you don't have those unsaturated fats in your eyes, you're far less susceptible to those damages. So there's a lot of different systems in the body where the things that we see kind of causing all these different problems, like certain types of fats, certain types of amino acids, certain hormones or chemical additives, whenever they get in the way of how the tissues like to perform, they can make them much more susceptible to the impact of things that could otherwise be processed by a normal person.
Right. And keep in mind also that it appears that alcohol has the ability to destroy vitamin C. And I don't know so much that it's actually destroying it. That might not be the case. That maybe just be people's viewpoints. But the body could be using vitamin C to bind to anything that appears as a toxin so that it can be removed from the body. So you may be using up a lot more vitamin C than you normally would, reducing your ability to repair and rebuild damage that may have happened when you got flung from a mechanical bull.
Yeah. And one thing that's really interesting about vitamin C, there's argument that like, oh, if you take extra vitamin C, you just pee it all out. But one of my favorite scientists had this. He's the only man who ever won two Nobel prizes, and one and two independently. One of them was in the like Nobel Prize in Chemistry, and one of them was in Peace Prize. And he talked about how critical vitamin C was as a protection agent against free radical damage. And people would pitch against him like, oh, you just pee out extra vitamin C. But he monitored how much that he took in. And he was consuming about 10 grams of vitamin C a day and monitored in his urine. He was only peeing out about 1.5. So he found like his tissues were using it. And he, you know, he's still in like pretty immaculate health. And with it, like he thinks there's a lot of potential benefits. If you're going to increase your exposure to free radicals, like the effects that alcohol has on the system, you can benefit from other things that have these antioxidant protective effects.
Cool.
Meg from Lehigh University. Are we pickling our brains with even small amounts, like one glass of wine?
You know, I don't feel like that. I don't think that's the case. And that doesn't mean that it's that you should look at it as it's beneficial, but I think that the body is resilient. It's made to put up with, you know, some bad stuff. The problem is that for many people in this world today, 80% of what they're putting in their body is bad. So if you're that person, then maybe the effects of one glass of wine is a little more magnified that it might be for someone else.
Yeah, like if you're living the 80-20 or the 90-10 or whatever, where 80 or 90% of the time you're doing everything possible to be healthy, then yeah, you
right.
could have that little treat.
Right. Mm-hmm. As long as you're not viewing it as this one glass of wine is beneficial. This is something that we really need to talk about because this is such a load of crap information that's out there that people feel like that red
but
wine
it's on
is,
the internet.
Oh, it was on the internet?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't know.
So it's got to be true.
Yeah, it must be true. But they view red wine as heart healthy. And what happens is if you make a product that everyone knows is not great for health, it can be bad for business. So if you can, fund some type of trial, clinical trial or something to find some findings that will benefit your product, then you can do that. And what they found was that in red wine, there's this stuff called resveratrol. And they did some studies on mostly on animals to find that it had benefits to the heart, that it was a heart healthy nutrient. So then they started promoting red wine as heart healthy. Excuse me. So the problem.
Take a drink of his beer.
Yeah, I had to have a swig of that Pabst. I'm drinking Pabst.
Oh,
PBR. But the problem is that in an ounce of wine, there's about 160 micrograms of this resveratrol. So in order to keep the dose the same as they found the benefits of the resveratrol in the mice, a person would have to drink 80 bottles of wine. They would have to drink 80 bottles of wine per day.
That's a challenge.
It's a challenge, but it's doable.
Hey, I like challenges.
Right. So you can't view some molecule in something as making that something beneficial. It's just fiction, because the time, anybody that drinks 80 bottles of wine, that's their last wine ever. They're dead that day.
Mm-hmm.
So don't view red wine as it's heart healthy, because to get the benefits of that resveratrol, you'd have to drink so much wine that you're causing a lot of other problems that are much worse for your heart than the resveratrol was. And that actually comes from the skin of red grapes. So you could just eat some red grapes.
There you go.
And you're golden.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a health, fitness, or nutrition professional, check out our other podcast, Six Figure Health Pro. We dig into the latest marketing techniques and business growing strategies for health professionals. To learn how to take your business to the next level, search for Six Figure Health Pro on iTunes or Stitcher, or go to sixfigurehealthpro.com to learn more. Now do what you're told.
All right, Christian. Japanese studies show that very minimal amounts of vodka helps with diabetes. I love the Japanese. Recently, I read an article about how dark red wine changes the gut flora in a way to reduce heart attacks. I think it's all about the dosage, balance between helping with trauma or killing healthy cells.
So let's agree with Kristen for a second.
Oh, it's not Christian. It's Kristen.
Kristen. Yeah. Let's agree with it for a second before I might not. But, Will, we've talked about in previous shows how even with diabetics, that a small amount of fructose could be beneficial, since that fructose is processed in the liver a little bit differently than carbs or glucose would be at the cellular level. And it's a way that you can kind of get some of that glucose type of fuel to the individual so that it can function correctly. So I could see where a super small amount of vodka could do a similar thing in a diabetic if it truly was a super small amount. Do you agree with that?
Like the small bottle of vodka.
That's, okay. See, that's the problem. Like when somebody says something like this,
to a person,
a small amount of vodka, be like, oh, well, just drink that on Thursday.
Yeah, it's all day long.
It's just my Thursday.
It's just a fifth.
So, but let's talk about the actual science of that for a second.
Yeah, I've talked with other doctors about this, and they were kind of more in. I know we're trying to agree with her at the moment.
Just for a second.
Yeah, I'm trying. But the doctors I talked to were not convinced of the validity of the claim that alcohol is in any way really good for you. Like I personally experienced that, of how it impacted my nervous system. As far as how it could benefit someone as far as cardiac risk, I don't know. But I'm not beyond the possibility that it could in some way. I am not sure what mechanism it would contribute. I know it helped me with my circulation because of my nervous system, but I don't see how it would necessarily fit. But it's possible. It could. I'm not sure what those studies, if they at all hypothesized about the mechanism of action there, but I don't know what it would be.
Because this is what you have to look at. When you look at any type of study, you have to be careful with what you're believing from the summary of that study, which is usually what most people would ever read, if that. They usually just read the headline. But if we did a study of doing six shots of Jägermeister every morning and looked at the effects of that, you know, 51%, and Kenna would be
Could be your subject.
He could be the subject. Yeah,
he loves Jaeger.
So this is the study: is 6 shots of Jaeger every morning. Yo is in this study, and so by doing this, Yo, and let's say 51% of everyone else in this study was more relaxed. They reduced their stress. They became a little more bold, and they were more effective at work, and they got a raise, and their life was better. So according to this study, 51% benefited. Even if 49% of the people in that study died from having Jägermeister every morning, the study could still prove that Jägermeister is beneficial.
And that's not calculating in like their ages, the way that they came into it, with their own health or their own imbalances.
It doesn't look at the person's ability to process Jägermeister. Yeah. It just looks at the bigger number benefited, so the study proved that it's beneficial. And people just read the headlines and then oh, don't.
And the sponsor is Jägermeister, who held it. Okay. Well, we already answered this question of Rick's last week about the insulin levels. Do you want to answer that again?
Well, Rick, try to pay attention and don't ask the same question we just answered last week.
Yeah, Rick. And if you'd like to learn how to become a health coach or even just dig into more advanced teachings for yourself or your
family. Are you talking to just
family,
Rick right now
I'm
or everybody?
I'm just talking to Rick. go to healthprocourse.com to learn about Tony and Will's course for coaches. Registration for this course only opens to the public for about a week at a time. So be sure to register for the coach newsletter so you'll be notified when the next registration opens. You'll find more info at healthprocourse.com, Rick. That's where you can find all your answers. Okay,
this is two questions we'll cover here.
Andrea, Pasco, Washington. I crave it like crazy. Hey, we're in the same boat there. They have this drink called the Flawless at the Federal. I dream about it. Like, it's got everything good in life in that drink.
That's weird.
Yeah, it's really tasty. And it's also super expensive. I'm like, really? Nissa. Nissa. I always do that. Sorry, Nissa. Chicago, Illinois. Are there certain imbalances among alcoholics that can be improved? Any common imbalances among people who do not drink alcohol but enable alcoholics? Smile emoticon.
Go a little bit further. She has
She's got more. She's got more. Oh, dear God. Oh, dear. Okay, they're stuck together. Okay. Also, as I get older the hangovers get worse. Sometimes just one glass of wine can give me a headache for days. What can I do to enjoy Cabernet again? Yeah, that is the question.
That is. So let's look. Kenna can answer why people would crave alcohol.
The sugar to thicken your blood pressure. A lot of reasons, you know. I mean, if you've got low blood pressure, especially like somebody like me or mineral deplete or something, you're trying to thicken the blood. So
good job.
There you go.
What else should we add to that? Will, anything?
I would say, like, if you're really high strung and have a high stress job and you're stuck in like that, those fight or flight sort of chemicals, it can have that cooling, relaxing effect on your mind. Like, but getting in the way of all those worrisome thoughts, it can help kind of pull you out of a stress.
Or if you're really shy and you have to go out a lot of times socially, you know, it's that liquid courage.
Right. And think about that. Not only is someone stuck in that sympathetic state where that's a stress, but what Kenna was saying, if your mineral levels are low or your nutrients are low or your blood pressure is low, that can be a stress on the body itself. And that often expresses itself in the person's life as feeling stress or anxiety
craving.
Type of thing. So drinking fixes that, you know, thickens up the blood and can not only reduce the stress of the body, but of the person.
But keeps the cycle going because it's also diuretic, so you're peeing out more and all that. So it's just like this vicious cycle of your body feels like it wants it, but it doesn't remember that, oh, I peed everything out the last time I had it, so.
Which kind of brings us to the alcoholic thing, and it kind of helps you understand how a person could become an alcoholic if the drinking made them feel better, but is really exacerbating that situation and making it worse long term.
The next day you're depressed, you're
going to want another drink.
And then you're like, oh, I'm going to have another drink because it made me feel really good last night.
Right. So Nissa asks about, you know, what imbalances are common with alcoholics. And it appears that most commonly it's an electrolyte deficiency imbalance. And the person, just like a smoker, is looking for things that that can thicken the blood or at least constrict the system with higher levels of sugar. Because that's usually an alcoholic would be probably past that point of where it was pushing them parasympathetic initially, like we were talking about before, Will, and might be creating an emergency if they're drinking all the time, and they might end up being more sympathetic at that point.
Yeah. And, you know, there's also, like, outside of the regular imbalances that we typically talk about, someone who has, like, some possibly valid reason to be depressed or anxious or you know, they're just trying to get out of those thought patterns. And it could be a real thing that was like, yeah, your child died. Like, that's depressing, you know, like, they don't want to think about it. So there's that kind of issue, too, obviously. And the tough part about alcohol is it is a depressant at the same time. Like, it depletes your cells of energy, depletes your brain of energy. So on one level, it helps you not think. So if you have worrisome thoughts, it helps you not have them. But it also causes your body to have less energy to do stuff. And with that depletion of energy, we feel like we're not as capable of meeting our challenges as we would if we were, you know, if we were energized. So it can lead to, like, more despair the more that you go that route, rather than try to take a more proactive, healthy way to deal with real life issues.
I've noticed too, as I've gotten older, I don't know if it's age or just like toxic levels or whatever, but like used to, I would like drink and I could rage all night long and stay up. Now I have one or two and I'm really tired. Like, I'm like, okay, I'm ready for bed, you know?
Right. And that has some, that may have to do with like what Nissa's asking about. Why do I get, and why does it hit me so hard the next day?
And then I wake up. I would like sleep. Now I get up super early. I can't sleep well. Like, I might go to bed and I'm sleeping really hard for a while, but then I'm up at the crack of dawn and I don't know why, you know?
And, you know, when we go back to Rick's question a little bit, talking about the actual reasons that would create a hangover, when you look at some of those reasons, you know, after years of life of a liver getting beat up and not working as well, you know, we see it's very common that a liver is not as effective as it was when we were 18.
Poor liver.
Right? Aww. It's a sad day. It just needs a hug. It
needs a one-woman show, that liver.
So as we age, our ability to deal with this toxic load or the spike and the crash and the stress that can come from the body being in a super low blood sugar state that comes in that crash, you know, all of those things can be elevated and our ability to deal with them is restricted. So that's why a hangover could be a much harder to deal with now than it was before for a lot of people.
And that early morning wake up is, that's exactly what you're talking about. Those elevated stress hormones from that blood sugar crash, they're waking up because of adrenaline and cortisol. That's how you normally wake up at a reasonable hour, you know, like when you're supposed to. But if you went, you drank like crazy and you're in this slightly older state where you don't have as many resources to keep your blood sugar balanced, or you created a huge spike and drop, your adrenaline levels are going to rise as your blood sugar falls. And that's what will wake you up or give you like panic dreams, that kind of thing too. So they're waking up because of that.
And we see that with a lot of clients even without drinking. They're just low blood pressure people that are eating in a way that would spike and crash just like alcohol would do. And they're insomniacs because of that. And when you fix the situation, help their body have a higher level of buffer, the ability to buffer the low resources, and then change their eating so they don't spike and crash, then they sleep. So it's a similar situation.
Yeah. I mean, like, I didn't drink last night, but I still woke up in a panic state because I had dreamed that Steve Martin died. I was like,
Wants that? Nobody wants that.
Okay. Virginia from Montgomery, Alabama. Alcoholism runs in my family on my father's side. Are alcohol cravings just another form of carbohydrate sugar cravings? It's interesting that alcoholism is in my family, but I never craved it. I guess my cravings have always been for sugars that you eat as opposed to ones that you drink.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, we've talked so much about, you know, what's genetic and what is really runs in a family. And I just don't like it when people view it that way. I think that there are genetics that can run in a family that can make you more susceptible to specific imbalances.
Yeah, hotness runs in my family.
Right.
There you go.
Yeah, it happens. Yeah. But I think a person always has the ability to make choices and to improve chemistry so that they don't have to deal with that. My dad was an alcoholic, and I've never been to where I need a drink or anything like that. It's more about your chemistry and how your body is functioning than your family.
I would think that there's, I agree with you. Like, I don't think that there's usually a genetic proponent to that. And there might be, I don't know if there's like, there's definitely is for some diseases, but I think that something like alcohol has a lot more to do with learned behavior. Like, kind of like posture. Like, a lot of people think like, oh, my family has knocked knees, but I'm like, oh, I know that's not true. Like, I've worked with so many posture correction clients. Like, you can fix it through exercise. And I know my brother and my dad's posture is identical, but I stand upright, and it's because of what I do, you know, the exercises that I do. And I know that a lot of people tend to adopt habits that they witness. So if your parents dealt with things by like hitting each other, you're going to be more prone to using that tactic when you come across a conflict. And if your parents or relatives dealt with problems by drinking alcohol, you're going to be more just prone to like, oh, that's how you manage it, you know, from this learned behavior. So that's not really genetic. It's more a matter of like nurture, cultivation of like behavior patterns. And I think that is a totally valid thing of why something could run in a family because of learned behavior. But that's kind of separate from body chemistry.
But even like the suggestion of it, like my uncle always says, I got Mac and Roe knees, you know, and it's like, okay, well, if you think you're going to have bad knees because a lot of people in the Mac and Roe family have it, you might, just like alcoholism. Like if you think, oh, my brother, my blah, 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 my dad, blah, blah, there's no hope for me. I'm going to be an alcoholic.
Like then you're creating might be, it.
Yeah, you're creating it. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, but I do agree with Virginia saying that, you know, maybe my cravings just have been for other things that are basically the same thing, just not in liquid form, which is, I think, is
yeah, accurate. Maybe it comes like they're all sugar cravings for the whole family. Maybe it was the way they ate, you know, being brought up or sure. Where they lived. And then all of a sudden they all just tended to go towards alcohol and she tended to go towards, you know, cheesecake.
Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah, whatever.
Okay.
All right, okay. Susan. Is it Susan or Suzanne? There's two N's.
Yeah, I don't know how to do that. I think it's Susan.
Carrollton, Texas. Why can some people drink alcohol with no problem, but all of a sudden they get an autoimmune histamine intolerance and they can't drink anymore? So what is the root cause and how can they fix this? I want to fix this problem so I can drink.
You know, one thing that you hear a lot about is that alcohol has an effect on the permeability of the intestinal lining and can basically lead to a leaky gut situation. And when we talk about our, food sensitivity episode, we talk about how people create food sensitivity issues. It's often from food not breaking down correctly and then that food slipping in through excessive permeability in the intestinal tract and getting into the bloodstream. And that's how you create this allergy response. And it could be how a lot of people can create histamine type issues as well. And, you know, a lot of alcohols do have gluten and, you know, we don't know that gluten is what causes the problem. Sometimes it can be a lot of the cofactors that go along with gluten. That's kind of, I think, what me and Will kind of feel is an issue with a lot of those things. But so is that what's causing some of the problems with the leaky gut? I have no idea. But if there's a lot of information out there that really backs up that alcohol has the ability to cause a problem to that barrier. So if it does, it certainly could create a problem like Suzanne is talking about. Will, why don't you say things?
Yeah, no, I mean, I haven't studied the alcohol's impact on the intestines as much, but I totally get what you're saying. And if it does damage that lining, then all sorts of foods could then become allergies for you.
Right. And it does seem that they've backed up a lot of that it can have an effect on some of the beneficial bacteria. And even if the alcohol itself was not causing a problem for the intestinal tract, if you wiped out a lot of beneficial bacteria and other bad guys got in and set up camp, they would have the ability to damage that intestinal lining, which then could create that permeability as well. So is it one or the other? I have no clue. But if they're accurate that it can cause problems, then it would certainly create this situation that you're talking about, Suzanne.
Yeah.
Cool. I think we got through all the questions, unless Rick has one that he just sent in.
No, I'm not even drunk anymore.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, I've sobered up. If you want to learn more about how to look at your own chemistry, you can read any of Tony's books or take the almost free 4-week digestion course at kickitnaturally.com. Or head on over to willsmybodyofknowledge.net. He's got a lot of great info on there and some pain relief videos, all kinds of great stuff. And I'm sure there's some sexy pictures of him on there too as well.
Sure.
Why not?
Yeah, so join us next week when we're going to cover how to unclog your kitchen sink.
Ah, nice. That's a good one.
Yeah.
A little tangent, but okay.
Yeah. Bye.